Welcome back from the break. I want to introduce Frank Ackermann, and he's telling us something about Prison Break, the value of online identities.
Good afternoon, all. Thanks for being here, and thanks for coming back for all the coffee break, and also thanks for the DeepSec organization having me here. I'm talking about Prison Break. This is a very fancy topic. It's more about the value identities, what's behind that, what's the story things. Short disclaimer, everything I talk is a private investigation thing. It's not reflected of the opinion of my former employees, of my current employee, whatever. And Prison Break is also not related to a website or a toy from Activision, I think it is. Something about me. My heroic motto is security is not my job, it's my passion, because I really love it, and this is why I also do this talk as a private person. I'm working and living in Düsseldorf since years. I'm working in security management, consulting, architecture, whatever, and if you want to contact me, I have a special Prison Break email address, so if you would like to have a copy of the slides or something, send me a love letter or something, just do it there. I split the talk in two theses. One is the Prison Break data gathering is becoming civilians, and the other is the value of identities, like identities are becoming the future currencies. I decided to have this talk because of many reasons, because of things what I experienced in the past, things what I've experienced, beginning of the year. One was, of course, that we had a lot of identity theft. And identity theft increased. We experienced a lot of, for example, fraud in combination with what happened in the bank environment. Then, in the very, very beginning of the year, I ran into a group of, they call themselves wine bloggers. What they do is actually they blog everything about wine. When they, for example, taste the wine, then they try food with wine, they blog everything. And I was happy that I was able to look over their shoulder and see what kind of tools they use. And I was shocked, because the tools are vulnerable like hell. What they're explaining and posting was like they're expressing everything of their life, everything, everywhere in the internet. And they're not even aware that this can be used against them in later times. And last but not least, Edward Snowden's awareness campaign, what I call awareness campaign, was actually another trigger for having this talk. So start with the first thing. Start with the Prison Break, data gathering. What I can start with, and what you maybe know, and what you've already seen, is this kind of slide, where it displays actually how many companies are involved in this complete agency information security problem we're discussing right now in public. So there are many companies, especially US companies, interacting with the agencies willingly or under, let's say, they're motivated to interact with them. And what they're doing is actually they serve with a lot of information. They serve with a lot of details of users which are interesting, which are producing a large amount of metadata, and which can be also used for ordinary profiling. It's something where in the later ages, or sorry, in the past, agents were really happy about that. For example, years before, like Second World War or in the First World War, the agencies would be very happy to have this kind of data to analyze what the users are doing, what actually the other agencies are doing. Now we're talking about this. But it's not only that we're talking about PRISM, it's only that there are other programs in the US and also on the British side that they're working on and thinking about how they can process data, what is really important to think about. For example, the FBI stated a program which was already submitted in June 2004. It called Next Generation Identification. And when one of you, after 2004, entered the US as a citizen, or as a visitor, or as a work and travel, whatever visa thing, you have to have a fingerprint and you have to give your a next photo when you enter the US. And this is actually one combination of what they're doing there. This is used actually to, and this is what they're saying they use it, to identify potential criminals or criminals from the past which were gone away, which were disappeared, and they now try to find them because of their biometric data, because of pictures, because of fingerprints. And just assume, for example, you were once in a while where the World Trade Centers were existing, you were in that building, and you just opened the door with your hand, and this fingerprint afterwards got verified, and your fingerprint is now in this database, and also in the database of these are potential, let's say, attackers against the World Trade Center. Now there is a direct link, and this is what actually this database could also be used for. The interest, and another thing what I also want to say is the British Agency, for example, they're also very interested in traffic on international connectors like the sub-internet fiber classes. They're tracking everything which comes over that, and they're analyzing and run a scan over the metadata. There are commercial products of that, which means there's, for example, a commercial product and a vendor called Glimmer Glass, and they make their work and their potential of this product in analyzing large amount of metadata, and they offer supreme profiling. They offer fast and reliable work on metadata. And this is actually one example why this works it all together. So on the one side, we have agencies who are highly interested in getting large amount of metadata. And on the other side, we have companies who are specialized in producing a product which is able to run verifying or run analyzes on this large amount of data. So this can, when you count one and one together, this goes in direction of civilian city or civilian society. When you, for example, take Prism as one example, or Tempora, or RX Core, or something the US or the Germans are using, or, for example, every tool which is on your mobile to locate where you are, or, for example, scanning the envelopes of letters which are incoming or outgoing of a country, this is actually one aspect of civilian society. Another thing which is really interesting is that agencies, for example, track locations of citizens, or they try to know what you're doing. They try to know what's actually happening. Another thing which is also, extremely hot or interesting is the aspect that not only commercial, but also free usage software like freeware, they're starting to use picture tagging, which is one aspect of where you can identify individuals out of a group of large photo. For example, when you see in the old days, we had, for example, all over Europe, there were demonstrations against data privacy, against certain things in the local environment, something. So they made a picture, just a picture out of a demonstration group from 100, 150 people. And now they're able to electronically identify individuals out of that group, which was in the earlier days a handwork, a manual work, which took years to identify individual people. But now having the possibility to identify faces, to run biometric analyses of the faces and then verify this biometric analyses against the biometric faces in this large picture or in this large picture, this actually enables very easy identification of individuals even when this individual is now 10 years older. So picture analyses, what does it mean? What is actually the current situation? Mark Green, one of the chief executives of a company which is doing the rating for financial, what is it actually? They're running a rating system for companies and what their financial status is. And there, he's actually expressing on the one side that data is good, which means the more data he has, the more better view he can produce. The second is that he's really keen on to know everything because he says, we know what you're going to do tomorrow because he's really interesting to do predictive analysis. And this is what also a couple of people are thinking about when you, for example, use metadata, large amount of metadata, think about what the structure is going to be, and then you can do predictive analysis to, for example, prevent crime. And just taken as example, the movie Minority Report. This is one idea that agencies or police or other groups are interested to also analyze where people are going, where groups are going, which kind of trends are actually happening. How is that? History. The history is we had isolated data. We had super silos where the private people had their only private thing, like they shared their picture in their private room having a wine and had their pictures from the holiday, and everything was good. The private sector, like the companies, exchanged the data internally and really accessed only the information and the customers when it's needed, for example, on a request form or a new user comes in or a bank account needs to be started. And of course, also in the old days, there was military and agencies and intelligence who was interested in certain data, so they did spying on that, but that was individual. So summed up, it was still segregated. What's happening now is that there's a breakup of boundaries. There's a breakup of boundaries because people are willing to share. They're willing to share on the one side because that the private sector is using services from platforms which are now from the commercial side. The commercial side itself, they're exchanging their data. And also the commercial side sometimes extract their own data and sell it to others as a new market. The other thing, what makes it also possible is speaking about affected future. Like, as I said before, when you start analyzing information, you can actually see prediction. You can see what's happening in future, what might happen. So this would actually, this experienced a guy called Lethwin Bryan. He Twittered once before he started his trip onto the US that he will destroy US, that he will destroy America. What does it mean? It means, for him it was, I will party to the ground. Because destroy something is also like, I will party till I'm done. What the in that case, the US security on the border actually interpreted on this was, oh man, maybe this guy is going to hurt the US, maybe we have to draw him out of the plane and start our investigation. And this is what happened. He didn't even enter the US. He was directly drawn out of the border, including his girlfriend, was interviewed for a couple of hours and then directly sent back to Britain, and did had a I think it was a non-return, like he's not able to return to the US again. And this is one example for when it starts that analyzers can be used for predictive behavior, what's actually happening in the future. Another thing which actually happened after the bombing of the Boston Marathon was there was a private household who did research on pressure cooking and backpacks. And this glue of two fixed words was picked up by the agencies, and they did a surgery on this house because they thought that because of the bombing was done with a pressure cook, with a pressure pot within a backpack, had something to do with them. So they started a direct search on this household. This was quite strange. Conclusion of the first thesis in that case is that data gathering can support civilians. And the more data we are actually collecting currently, and the more data the companies are actually collecting, this is more and more going in that way. And of course, enterprises and agencies are verifying mechanisms. They think about how they can actually, what they can do with this. Is it possible really to gather all this information and to work something out and to do some new analysis in that direction? Second thesis, the value. And here it's really the value of its own. The value of an identity is not only the value of the identity itself, it's firstly starts with the information. First of all, the information, the content stands on its own. Even when you do not know the owner of this content and when you do not know the creator, it's just the content. You just read it or you have a PDF or a picture, whatever. Then this content is starting to be a value when it's on the correct platform, on the right bottom, which means, for example, when you have a weather picture on a weather platform or a weather casting platform, it's valuable. When it's on a, for example, financial environment platform, it's not valuable at all. After all, the value increases as well when you have somebody who's really into the topic, who's, for example, known as somebody who's, for example, producing valuable information, who's, for example, a good meteorologist, who's producing good weather data, somebody who's doing good in financial information. When you can follow him, when you can trust this person, this is a valuable source. And in combination of having this content coming on this platform and combination with this identity, then all in all, everything starts to be in value itself. For example, when you have Reuters as one of the biggest financial news feed for the traders on the international market, when they start to produce that one country is under attack, it's more reliable, for example, when instead of this kind of one country is under attack is coming from a weather broadcast. In the beginning, I mentioned that I came in contact with this wine blogger, so I also did some thoughts about what is blogging, can we make blog, how can we make money out of blogs and stuff. So the word blogging came actually from 1997 from the weblog. And then later on, everybody talked about weblog. So log means leave track. So we start leave tracks on certain things. And this is actually how, for example, blogging is used, how many people are used blogging for their own private or business use. For example, what I call microblogging is what Twitter and Facebook does. Online journalism, there are a lot of online journalists who write articles and produce only online, their articles, their information, and publish themselves there. Sometimes it's video audio blogging. For example, one big channel is YouTube, where people make a lot of money out of that. Or opinion makers, or people who do cross-selling, cross-advertising, because they have fun with a certain article or with a certain product, and they say, this stuff is awesome, we do something. For example, I really can recommend George Masters' iPod ads, because he's doing ads by his own because he's such a fan of iPod products. Making money with that. How can you make money out of that? It's just, you can add marketing links, you can add pay-per-click things, you can add whatever banners, advertisement, and everything which comes with that. It's crazy how much money can you make out of that. It's absolutely, it's worth to have an independent talk about that because it's really a large topic. Speaking about money, and this is the real fact, I found some figures, not everybody is talking about that. There are people saying making between 4,000 euros per month. There are people saying they're making 18,000 per month. So it's really large of money. And when you, for example, think about that persons or users or hackers are interested to gain in these identities, then you can actually verify if it's a valuable account or not. Is it, for example, interesting to gain this account or not? Another question which I always get in combination with that, what is the value of a Facebook account? There was one interesting marketing research from a company called Syncape, and they produced a report, actually it was a marketing analysis, that a Facebook account, a fan, is valuable between 150 to 170 bucks. And how does it come? It's because the fan is a real fan. He's positively impressed of the product. For example, Coca-Cola. When a guy or a girl is actually a fan of a product, he really runs to the shop and also buys the merchandise articles. He's buying the latest gadgets. He's also keen on getting the latest products. And when, for example, Coca-Cola is presenting a new product, for example, a yellow Coke or a white Coke again or whatever, this person will follow. They will be, they try to be, it's called the fast followers. They try to be very on the peak and try to get the latest product in time. And they will be, because they're a fan, speak positive, even when the product is not so great. They will speak positive and they will sell it positive because they're a fan of it. And this is actually the interlinkage between a fan and a non-fan, or a fan and a product. The interaction itself is extremely valuable, because when you know, when you have an interaction between two clients or between two users, you can see, okay, there is an email, for example, going on between A and B, and you see there is information flowing. But vice versa, when this information contains details or a value, like, for example, do you actually know that, for example, the new Coke product is awesome? As a positive feedback in this message contains a value itself because it's a positive seller. And when you compare, for example, the left and the right picture, of course, nobody is really keen on, after all, seeing that there is a negative interaction between two counterparties. It's more like the people would like to see it's positive. And this is also what's happening on the social platform. Most of the social platforms do only support positive feedbacks, do only support positive interactions. But when it comes to criticism, when it comes to not so great feedback, it's not working. The platform doesn't offer it, nor it's not possible to support it because the platform suppresses it. Is it really used? Oh yes, it's used. It's, for example, used in Amazon. Everybody who actually bought something in Amazon is able to review a product. When you review a product, you can give out stars. I think it's 4 or 5 stars, something. And these feedback can be rated by other users. And the more you actually review, the more you give feedback on products, and the more your other people feedback on your own feedback, on your own review, the more you raise your ranking. The more you raise your ranking, the more you get in your Hall of Fame. When you stay in the Hall of Fame, you become, I don't know, annual whatever reviewer, and you get a special state in the Amazon environment. And also you get in the attraction of producers, which means that producers are keen on working together with you because they see, oh my gosh, this person is awesome. He can do a lot of review. He can do a lot of things. And he's writing extremely positive on the product. So why not give him or her the latest products, try it out, and just review it? And this is what actually happens itself. Another thing which happens on Amazon, which is also great, is that when you click on a product, even when you have hundreds of reviews of this product, you always find the latest 5 5-star, whatever, greatest feedback, and the others are hidden. You really have to dig sometimes deep to read the not-so-great feedback of a product. Just to run a bit about content usage and the feedback, this is actually the model which I just explained how Amazon is actually running. And because it's not only that the platform or the tool is knowing how the interaction between user A and user B is, like user A is, for example, giving feedback on a product, and user B is giving feedback on the review of this. It's also that you rate indirectly the product, because when other people are following this kind of review, it means that this kind of product is very attractive for the consumers. Speaking a little bit more about this rating, the vendor, in that case it's Amazon, is really keen on getting this information because they're actually thinking about what's overall does it mean. Does it mean actually that the product is good, that the user is good, that the user A and B is good? What is the relationship between A and B? What is the relationship between the user A and the product and the user B and the product? This goes to the point, there are chances and there are also challenges for the business. This is one slide where I found from Boston Consulting Group. They mentioned that they're currently, we're in a slow state of digital processing and identity intensity, which means currently we have some identities and they're used or not so used. But when you, for example, see what's happened in the financial market, in the very beginning of the online banking, we had user IDs and passwords. Then they come with this standard token or TAN, and then they had this mobile TAN, And currently what they're doing is they have this user ID, their TAN, and they start to run user behavior analyzes to prevent fraud. So taking this curve means we are just in the beginning of what's happening with our identities and why is it actually that identities increase on value. Another example for that value of identities is really valuable, and actually the complete environment is very valuable, is the Sony's network breach in 011. This was actually a big, big, not so great situation for Sony because they lost not only the trust in the product and in the complete network, they lost trust of users. The people lost trust that this network could actually offer them a good platform to buy products, to exchange, to work on their own identity, on their profile, to game with or game not. I have to run a bit. The other challenges are most of the privacy controls are not in control of the user, which means a lot of companies know that it's valuable to have the data, but they're not giving the control to the user. They're not actually displaying what they're doing with this data. And this sometimes is extremely challenging with the company, for the company, which means the companies on the one side say, okay, it's necessary to collect all this data. It's necessary to really think about what we're having in the pocket. Maybe we can use it later on for analyzes. But they're not starting in the beginning with we collect that and that data for that and that reason, and the rest we leave out. And this is one of the big issues we're going to see also in the future. We're going to see that because there's still a lot of attack vectors and attack surface on our environment. We are still running with problems on the basics. We are still running problems, for example, with Java, with the browser, with whatever, cross-site scripting. The vulnerabilities of IPv6 are more or less the same with IPv4. So to be honest, we didn't learn from the past. And this is actually how it looks for in a management view. We have the users in the blue field, and they would like to grow. They would like to do more. They would like to know new things. They would like to explore new features. And the more they learn and the more they would like to do, the more they grow. And of course, there are new techniques coming up, and the techniques are changing. But the more techniques we are using, and especially the more techniques which are not verified, can be used for vulnerabilities / attacks. So first of all, we have to know what we use, and this is the sharp one area. So we first have to think, when we are growing in some direction, we have to think what we are really using. For example, when we are using blogging tools, do we really understand the technique behind it? Is it really necessary to install all 25 plugins for this especially browser tool or for this blogging tool to run our things what we want to do? And the second thing is when we are talking about techniques, the techniques have to verify and increase security to reduce the amount of vulnerabilities to not get hacked. Twitter is another example. Twitter hacks are quite famous, and there's a couple of examples, like, for example, the Syrian Electronic Army they hacked into diverse Twitter accounts and posted their political expressions. But what they did wrong was they used, for example, FIFA-like football channels to express political opinions. When they, for example, would have used Twitter accounts of political opinion makers and use this or misuse that, this would have actually the right bottom for working. Fake accounts is another issue of value of identities because there is still no verification of identities. We still can create fake accounts in Twitter, we can fake accounts in Facebook, we can fake accounts in Freemail, whatever, because it's not verified. And as long as it's not possible to verify the users, it's not possible to verify if the data is wrong or not. We do not know if the source is correct. When we do not know, when the source is correct, the question is everything we read or we get out of the internet, is it right or wrong? And this is actually one thing which is extremely interesting, especially when we're talking about subtopics, special topics like political discussions, opinion making of special products, opinion making of certain, let's say, motivations making people think left or right. This is quite interesting. The other questions, what we actually should think about, and the main question here is, why is it free of charge? Is when we use something of free, and when it's not actually, you don't have to pay for the authentication or the authenticity of the data, why is it free? Who actually benefits out of that? What is actually the reason behind that? And after all, there ain't no free thing as a free lunch, which means when something is free, there's something wrong or something odd. You should think about it. And this is actually what coming in combination with that. When users start to use a platform which definitely costs money, for example, a free mailer, even when you use a professional free mailer, you pay $3, $5 a month. But these are only the compensating costs. These are not the real costs of how the service, what the service costs, what the backup costs, what the data costs. And when we use something for free, actually we trade something. And this is the question I would like also to you give here in this talk. When we give something away, somebody else benefits from it because we're not paying for that. And this comes to the conclusion of the second part that on the one side, the business enterprises are really working hard to gather this data and to analyze and to think about how they can analyze this data, how to produce metadata, and how to segregate this metadata, selling to others, sharing with others, interact with others. And the second, is it really, when it's so valuable, how can it be verified? How can it be qualified? Is it really, when it's really high valuable and qualified data, this is becoming a currency. This is becoming the next state of, let's say, currency you're going to pay in the future. Summed up, as always, first think, then act. Most of the companies do not think about why they're actually gathering data. They're just saying, oh, we're writing log files. Data doesn't cost much, so we store it. Let's see. That's not so great because of internet does not forget. Whatever you store, whatever you push into the internet, whatever you're doing on a social platform, internet does not forget. As a private person, it's really valuable to read through the conditions, read through the terms and conditions, because most of the platforms directly say, when you're entering something here, when you're storing data, when you're actually placing your pictures, the pictures become us. This is actually the currency you pay. You pay with information, and the more qualified information you give, the more value actually the platform has, the more increases. For the companies, I say, when asking for user information, also allow to block it. Also allow to say, no, I'm not giving this detail. Sometimes it's not necessary to know if this person is 38, 27, or 102 years old. Sometimes it's not necessary to know if the gender is male or female. First think, then act. And the last thing, which was directly copied out of, there's a telecommunication company, Verizon. They're having an intrusive report, something like a vulnerability and data breach report, correct? And then they directly mention it. One of the major points in the management summary, eliminate unnecessary data, keep tabs on what's left. And this is what they also recommend for the companies, because a lot of companies store a lot of crazy stuff, and you do not need this. Even when you have a works council, and they're saying, oh, we have to protect the employees, but the customers are not the employees. And the data protection law in Germany, or in overall in Europe, They protect as best as positive, but they cannot prevent everything. So companies on the one side and users on the other side, they have to get together and think about which data they are sharing, on which data they have to control, and which data they're really saving or not. Any questions?
Thank you, Frank Ackermann.
Welcome.
Hi, thanks for the good presentation. My name is Anton. You mentioned the Sony PlayStation 3 hack.
Yeah.
Was it so bad after all? I mean, if you look now at the PlayStation 4 pre-orders, the numbers are astronomical. So what I guess I'm asking is, could it be that consumers don't care anymore, that they have been hacked because it's kind of become an everyday thing? So they forget those little things like being hacked a few years back.
I think the interesting part of the Sony Networks breach was that they lost so many information on block. They lost not only the trust of the consumers, they lost also the complete credentials of everybody who was in the network before. So a lot of users directly reduced or deleted their profile in this network, and this was a big loss for Sony, because they also used these identities to verify what are the trends, what are the trends of the players, what are they doing in the network. This network in all, it's awesome. It really allows people to interact, to chat directly, to play together, to also buy the product online directly without big issues. And having this network breach, having this security breach, was a big loss because the people lost their trust. A lot of people also just revoked and deleted their MasterCard and whatever imprints they had to ensure that nobody is really using or misusing this data anymore, even when it was already done. And this was one of the big things. It's not about the future generation. I would say in 5 years, this is gone. The people forgot it, and the people may wait for another mistake of another big company. So I think the people are, well, they might learn, but not too much.
Okay. Thank you. Unfortunately, we don't have really time for other questions. If you're interested, you can always ask him after the talk. Thank you.
And I mean tomorrow as well.
Or tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you.